Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
I've got a friend who's like, he likes animation, but he said he doesn't like Ghibli films because he said they don't look that good. I was like, what do you mean exactly?
Wrong.
I just think it's got lots of different things going for it. I think it's really fun for kids and really entertaining. And, you know, like I said, it's got really great, strong characters. But I also think for adults, it's just so... it's escapism and it's really beautiful. I mean, it's one of the reasons I love Ghibli. It's just so beautiful. And sorry, that sounds glib, but, you know, it's just like an experience to watch it.
Hello, everyone. Joining FlixWatch today, we have Danny.
Hello.
David.
Hello.
And Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here today to talk about Ponyo. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely, we have Danny and David. Over to you, David, to introduce yourself, please.
Hello, I am David Smith. I run Wardour Studios, and I'm also co-director of Small Wardour. And Small Wardour specializes in making original audio content for kids. I'm a sound engineer and audio producer, musician. That's me.
Award-winning podcast maker, I presume.
Yes, we're very lucky. We won a silver award in the British Podcast Awards for our children's podcast, Super Great Kids Stories, which is sort of an oral tradition tales for kids, which was very nice, alongside some really great nominees as well. So it was very nice. Yeah.
And who are you on the other side?
Oh, sorry, is that me?
It is, yes. Sorry. It is.
So I'm Danny, and I have been in the world of podcasts for quite a long time. I started out as an audiobooks editor and podcast producer for Penguin Books. Mm. And then I moved on to head up Apple Podcasts for Europe. I think did that for about 8 years. And then very recently joined Carla and David for Small Wardour, because we've known each other a long time. We worked together on kids' content before, and I absolutely love kids' audio. So very excited to be branching out into the world of kids' audio, kids' podcasts.
So big question for me is how do you make kids' content, audio content that's engaging for them?
I mean, I think I would go back to the thing I always say about podcasting. The power of podcasting as a medium is that it just allows you to think about the audience. So in radio or in other mediums where you've got commissioners and folk who have to sort of be the gatekeepers in lots of ways, you have to think about them when you're thinking about your idea. Whereas with podcasting, you can go, well, either I've got an idea I really believe in, I think great content that I think there'll be an audience for, or like you can take a punt, and if you're wrong, the audience will tell you. But if you're right, the audience will find you. So I think the key really is thinking about what, you know, caring, genuinely caring about your audience and sort of trying to make it as great as you can, you know. So I guess that's not a fantastic answer, but I think thinking about the audience and allowing you to think, I think this is great and I think other people think this is great and I'm prepared to take the risk and take the punt, I think is half the battle.
Fair play. Today we're talking about Ponyo, which is your choice, Danny. Can you tell us first of all why you chose it? And then I will bring my timer, countdown timer, and you've got 60 seconds to give us the synopsis.
Well, I chose it because, to be honest, Totoro would have been my number one, but it was already taken. but Ponyo is a very good second choice because it's very dear to my heart. I have watched it so many times. My children are quarter Japanese and my partner frequently speaks Japanese with them. So it's really important to us that they watch Japanese films. And I just think it's such a great one for them. For, you know, I don't want to, you know, go into my synopsis bit, but I just think it's got lots of really lovely, it's really whimsical. I mean, I kind of hate that word, but that I just feel like it sums it up so well. It's very whimsical and it's just so imaginative and creative, but also with some amazing themes and characters in it. So, yeah, you know, like we mentioned earlier, with us starting Small Water, it's very much in the forefront of our mind what great kids' content looks like. And so I thought this was a lovely example.
Okay, and your synopsis timer starts now.
So Ponyo is about a little fish who meets a young boy and they become friends very, very quickly and become inseparable very quickly. But obviously, being a fish, she ends up having to go back to... well, she's actually quite a magical fish and her father is some sort of magical wizard of the sea. It's classic Ghibli, so it's all very vague. But he calls her back because he doesn't trust humans and she is not happy about that. She's fiercely independent and decides that she wants to go and live with Sosuke, her new friend. And so she drinks some crazy magical potion, releases it all into the sea and creates absolute kind of carnage, but also it's also kind of amazing the way that it's almost the sea reclaims this port town and there's a big flood and there's all sorts of amazing wildlife everywhere. And in the end, it all comes good. Her mum is very magical and brings them together and she gets to be a person. Boom! On the
nice
line.
The time, that.
That is magical. has anyone not seen Ponyo before?
I hadn't seen it before.
I hadn't seen it before either.
Yeah. I thought I'd seen quite a few Ghibli films, but I hadn't seen this one.
I think this is probably the biggest one that I hadn't seen. So yeah, when you selected it, I was like, yes, finally.
Ponyo. I've seen Ponyo before.
Well, let's stick with Ponyo before. I'm sure we'll dive into other Ghibli films. Is this just I don't want to say a rip-off of The Little Mermaid, but they actually use the word mermaid at some point in this, and there are analogous stories to The Little Mermaid and like Splash and this mythical, magical creature leaving their own surroundings and joining forces with a human on dry land. Is that taking too much away from it to lump it with those guys?
Well, actually, I only watch it in Japanese. I use subtitles. I can't follow it in Japanese. But they don't say mermaid in that version. Haven't watched. So I realised on my way here that I probably should have watched the dubbed version at some point, but I haven't. So... They don't actually mention it in that version. But I think, yeah, there is an interesting comparison. I think it is kind of along similar lines that, you know, she decides she loves the human world. And there is like a whole thing about a very nice, cute thing, which is kind of comparable to the Disney version of Little Mermaid about how she's fascinated with the human world. And, you know, she eats a piece of ham and she's like, what is this? This is amazing. And, you know, she has some like ramen and she's like, wow. But I think that she's a lot more like the mistress of her own destiny than the Little Mermaid is. I think she's kind of, you know, I think the Little Mermaid's quite a passive character, at least, well, you know, in the Hans Christian Andersen and in the Disney version, whereas Ponyo's quite stubborn and willful and she's like the powerful force in a way, isn't she?
And her thoughts on that, Helen?
I think it's a little bit unfair on Ponyo to kind of, so say it's maybe a Japanese version of the Disney version of A Little Mermaid. I agree with what you said, Danny, that Ponyo is more fascinated with other things in the human world other than just fancying a boy. I think there's more to her wanting to be human. And
Danny says she likes the ham.
Yeah.
We all like ham. Well, if you're not vegan or... Jewish or Muslim.
But I think if you're writing a story about a fish that comes out of the sea and decides to live as a human, then there'll always be a reference to The Little Mermaid. But I think this has got enough kind of differences for it to not just be like a Japanese version of that.
David, your first time watching it, did you know the story beforehand, and what were your initial impressions?
Well, I've always loved, I don't know whether it is it Hiyazaki, Ghibli or Ghibli. I've always loved this sort of,
I think they answered to either.
Like I answered either Dave or David or whatever. yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting just going slightly back to the previous question. I think, you know, putting my oral tradition tales hat on, I think, yeah, it's a sort of universe, like, I actually think it could be more like Cinderella in some ways. Like historically, there's like 1,000 different versions of Cinderella. Mm. And like often Cinderella, the fairy godmother, is a fish, right? Different cultures. So I think, it's going back a lot further than that in terms of it's a classic tale, isn't it, of different people finding each other kind of thing. I've dabbled a little bit myself just with noodling with animation. Whenever I watch, you know, Ghibli films, I'm like, oh my God, there's so much going on. Like, they're making it so hard for themselves. Like, you know, like there's a bit where, now I want to say his name correctly, Danny, the boy.
Sosuke.
You know, there's a bit where he's crouching. There's two scenes that early on that I thought were amazing, where he's crouching down by the sea and like you could just have him sitting there, but like his hair's blowing in the wind. There's grass swaying behind him. There's little things crawling all over the rocks. I'm like, this would have taken ages, but it looks effortless. And there's another bit where his mother works in a nursing home kind of thing and he ducks under the fence with a full bucket.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's so well done. Like, it just looks so, just like people. But like, it's just so effortless. But to do that effortlessly is so impressive.
Mm.
So I'm kind of just fascinated with, I'm not distracted by that, but I'm always like, oh my God, it's just so good, you know.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
And it's slow filmmaking because they let the wind blow through the trees and they let things rustle. They don't fill it up with stuff all the time.
I've got a friend who's like, he likes animation, but he said he doesn't like Ghibli films because he said they don't look that good. I was like, what do you mean exactly?
Wrong.
What ones have they seen? I'm curious.
No, each to their own, I guess. He's wrong, but you know, fair enough.
I can kind of understand maybe in the wide shots, if you just had a random abstract thing, but I think if you watch the whole film, I can't, you know, Totoro, for example, we spent a lot of time in the Totoro episode talking about like just them standing at a bus stop, and you've talked about Sasuke now crouching down with a bucket.
Yeah,
those are you know, just real natural everyday things. But then when it goes into fantastical, one of the scenes I really liked was when Ponyo was being defiant to her father about, you know, her father finds out that Ponyo's tasted blood, and that's where she's got the human kind of traits, alter the DNA, and then she kind of blows her thumb and like legs pop out and you're like, what? So I think I just like that kind of characteristic nature to the animation. I can kind of see what they're saying. It's not like super sharp, it's not like CGI detail animation, but if you go through to like some old school Disney, some of it looks really bad, but I don't think that's true of Ghibli at all. I don't think every time looks like it's been kind of done cheaply.
No, and they really make the most of, like, you can literally do anything in animation if you can imagine it. They do.
Yeah. The scene at the beginning where the father is dropping the elixir into the water and it's just creating all this life. It's just, I could just like watch that over and over. It's like, I wish it was my screensaver.
And the glowing orb, you're like, is this really the beginning? What? Hey?
I really love when they flood the town and all the sea creatures just kind of like are floating around and swimming past all the buildings, and they're kind of like picking out all the old fish with the names that I can't remember. Just really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. That's
makes
really
me want
nice.
To live under the sea.
There are some truly like amazing kind of, how did they come up with that as a scene, moments. Oh, Ponyo's inside a bubble. I can't remember why she's inside a bubble, but all the little Ponyos are like sucking on the outside of it. There's like thousands of them, like kissing it and then to make the bubble explode or to free Ponyo. And I'm just thinking that's such a mad thing to come up with and portray and make. But yeah, I mean, this is part of Ghibli's magic, I think. You talked, Danny, about the language. Anytime someone brings it on a Studio Ghibli film, we have to talk about the dubbed versus the original version with the subtitles. This time I just all the way through just went with the dubbed, but with Japanese subtitles, because I was just knackered. And one thing things myself and Helen always talk about is how wildly different sometimes the subtitles can be from the dubbed version. And this was no exception. Like in the subtitles, she's called Lisa. In the dubbed version, she's Mum. And I don't know if that's Lisa is Mum or that's...
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they set it up that way.
I read that the dubbed version has been adapted slightly.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was like, oh no, I should have watched that, because I read that on the way. But in the Japanese version, she's called Lisa. But that is my partner's half Japanese, and he grew up in Japan. Well, kind of grew up between Japan and the UK. But anyway, he said it's really uncommon to call your parent by their name. Mm. So
which suggests that's not her parent.
Well, so that's what I asked him, but he said, I think they're trying to like set Lisa up and Sosuke up. I think it's kind of part of their character development a little bit to be like, I mean, this might just be me and him overanalyzing it, but it feels like they're trying to, you know, make Sosuke quite independent in a way, and they're like a little partnership, aren't they? Because his dad's away quite a lot. And he has, you know, she has to do everything, doesn't she? So he kind of has to step up a little bit more than your average 5 or 6 year old does. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seemed, my partner was saying that it's obviously an intentional thing around the character, but at no point is it mentioned that she's not his mother.
Mm. He is trying to, I guess he's trying to be a bit like his dad, and his dad would refer to her as Lisa, you know, like, he's sort of emulating.
That's a good
maybe
point.
He's
yeah.
emulating.
So how did you watch it, David? Did you watch it with subtitles or?
I watched it in Japanese with English subtitles. Yeah. Because I didn't even realize when I looked it up and it said, oh, first of all, I was surprised it was made in 2008, but it said Cate Blanchett and Matt Damon. I was like, eh? But I don't think I could watch. I remember watching Spirited Away. This is back in the days when I hired the DVD, and it was a double-sided DVD. And one side was Japanese with English subtitles. The other side was dubbed. And I watched it and went, oh, yeah, it was good. And someone said, did you watch it in Japanese? I was like, can I watch it in Japanese? I'm like, you watched the wrong side. And so I went back and watched it again, and it made a huge difference, because the sort of expression in the Japanese and the characterization, I think, gives you a closer sort of emotional response to the intent of the characters. I don't know what it'd be like to hear. I mean, Matt Damon's fine. Cate Blanchett's great. I mean, I just don't know what that would be. You know, no, Matt Damon's great too. They're all great. You know, I don't know. I don't know.
Where were you, Helen, with it? You've often flipped and flopped every 20 minutes.
Yeah, so the first time I watched it Japanese with English dubs. And then the this time round, I watched it with the English dub, because I heard that Liam Neeson is Ponyo's father. And awesome. I was quite curious as to...
He does have a particular set of skills.
What he's like. And I quite enjoyed the agitated Liam Neeson playing her father, and the Cate Blanchett as the mother. Matt Damon's hardly in it. He plays the dad. So basically he's just like, I'm in the ship over here. And that's kind of it type thing. And Tina Fey's Lisa, and she's all like... Wah!
Is Tina Fey Lisa?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And there's like Lily...
Savage?
Lily Tomlin is one of the older ladies. And
Wow.
So I always say, like, go Japanese the first time, because you do, it is a different experience. Then, like, if you've seen it before, then, like, it is quite funny with Liam Neeson doing the... I don't know whether he quite really understood what he was reading, but it's quite an interesting experience. So, yeah, maybe if you watch it again, flip between the two.
What were your thoughts on Lisa versus Mum? What did you twig when you first watched it?
I was just like, oh, it's odd that he calls his mum Lisa. But
you thought from the start that's his mum?
Yeah, Yeah. Okay. I mean, they weren't like biological, then she's clearly like his mum, like there.
I thought it might be like an older sister or older cousin that's babysitter.
kids do that, right? They call their parents by their, when they know, once they work out their names, if they want to sass you, they call you your name because they know it's disrespectful. But I don't know whether that, I've seen my niece do that. I don't think that's the intention here, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's a film where a fish comes out of sea, eats some ham and floods the town. I mean, like whether the mum's called mum or she's called Lisa was like, not like my like.
Slightly goes by the way.
This isn't quite in reality, so I didn't even.
Fish eating ham, I guess they do.
That was a better synopsis than mine. I think you should have done the synopsis. You like got it in like 5 seconds.
All right, guys. Anything else you want to say before we head to the scores?
I just wanted to say one other thing that I quite like about it. I really like how it's a little bit of. I feel like that really is classic Ghibli, isn't it? Where it's like the line between human civilization and the natural world starts to blur. And, you know, we think we've built this nice solid port town and they're all in control of the situation. And, you know, they're polluting in the sea. And that's kind of referenced quite a bit. And then, you know, the barrier comes down and it's like the wild world just comes in. And I always like that about Ghibli, how it's like, you know, we're not separated from the natural world, and I think they cover that really nicely in this.
Guys, let's head to the scores.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood, from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by three or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this, and come join us.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy Priceline.
Welcome to the Flicks Watcher scores. They are always out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, please, Danny, with your recommendability.
Recommendability, I think I'd say 4.5 because I just think it's got lots of different things going for it. I think it's really fun for kids and really entertaining. And, you know, like I said, it's got really great, strong characters. But I also think for adults, it's just so, I'm going to say whimsical again. I keep saying this word. I don't like this word, but it's just, you know, it's escapism and it's really beautiful. I mean, it's one of the reasons I love Ghibli. It's just so beautiful. And sorry, that sounds glib, but, you know, it's just like an experience to watch it. So, yeah, I'd say 4.5.
David?
Yes, I love it too. I think I would give it a 4 only because I think we all know lots of people who love Ghibli, but I think sometimes you either sort of love it or you don't get it. So it would be a 5 but to people who love it, but then you're preaching to the choir. So I think it sort of has to be a 4 because not everyone's just going to, you know, I love Withnail and I, but I remember telling someone, you've got to watch Withnail. And they're like, didn't get it. It's just a couple of weird guys. So I guess you've got to know your audience. But yeah, I think 4 for that reason because not everyone's going to love it as much as Ghibli fans do, I guess.
Helen?
Yeah, I think this is still top tier Ghibli. I don't think it's Totoro top tier, but it's still in the top ones for me. I feel that maybe this one, kind of apart from the environmental kind of issues, is probably not that many kind of adulty themes, whereas like some of the other ones tend to kind of have that like extra layer of understanding and kind of like feeling, whereas this is probably kind of the more fantasy element of it. So I'm going to give it 4.3.
I'm going to go, I thought it was just cool. I think where it drops for me is where I think I would suggest other Ghibli's first. If it's someone's first time watching Studio Ghibli, I would probably put a few more ahead of it. So that's the only reason I'd take points away from it. But I thought it was really charming, and I don't know why I'd waited so long to watch it. I say this every time Ghibli comes on, but I always, you know, I always enjoy it. So yeah, 4. Repeat viewing score, Danny.
I have watched this a lot. So
how many times do you know?
Oh my goodness, I do not know. At one point during lockdown, it was every day. I'm not going to lie, we were allowed a film a day during lockdown. And
what do you mean you were allowed a film a day during lockdown? What does that mean?
Well, my kids at the time were only like 3 and not even 6 months or something. So I was like, oh, you know, you get that screen time guilt. And I was on mat leave, so I felt like obligated not to just bung them in front of the TV the whole time, but it was intense. So that's definitely a whole other conversation. But so I was like, during the worst point of it, I was like, right, we're going to watch a film a day. And for whatever reason, it was Ponyo and Totoro over and over every other day. It was Ponyo, then Totoro the next day, and then Ponyo again. So I at least 30 times, I think, at least, which is, yeah, I'm not exaggerating. That's really sad. But so I'd say I think I happily watched it 3 times. And then after that, it was I was done with it. So I think you could definitely watch it more than once, because I think, like Dave was saying, the illustration alone, like all those details keep you in. And there are, like, it is completely crazy fantasy world, so there are different aspects of it. But yeah, I definitely say not more than 3.
So repeat viewing score 3.
Oh, sorry. So repeat viewing score 4, as long as you're just going to watch it twice or 3 times.
I mean, does that make sense? I don't know. David?
Yeah, I'm definitely not as scarred by repeat viewings as Danny. So I would say probably a 4, because I think you can basically, you could fill up your life by watching all the Ghibli-produced films, like, you know, on a cycle, and you probably wouldn't get sick of it for quite a while. Mm. So yeah, I'm going to go for a 4.
Helen?
So I haven't seen this for years. I saw it years and years and years ago, and rewatching it, it was still all like really, really vivid, which I think is like a testament to kind of their animation and how it kind of like stays in your brain. So yeah, I enjoyed watching it again. How many more times am I gonna watch it? I'm not that sure. So a 3 for me for a repeat.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much often I'm gonna watch it, and I say the same thing I say every time I watch a Ghibli. I need to watch more and finish the rest of them before I watch this again. So I'm going for the same. I'm going to go for 3, as Helen has. Small screen score, Danny.
Yeah, I think just because of the quality of the animation and you know, like how vivid and bright it is, I think it works really well on the small screen. I think it would be incredible on the big screen, but I don't think it's taken away by watching it on TV. So yeah, I think I'd give it a 4 for that.
David?
Yeah, I think the small screen thing's a good question, because I'm very, very aware our TV at home is not that big. but it does work. I think, yeah, like I think the luxury of watching it, you know, I don't know, it's the sort of thing you could see at the Prince Charles or something, you know, if they do big screenings. But yeah, I think a solid 4. I think it worked really well. It doesn't take away from the magic of it. You're still sort of drawn in.
Helen?
Yeah, so I think like Picture House have done like Studio Ghibli seasons where they've had them on the big screen, and they've not, it's not really, I've never gone like, I need to see this on the big screen, and I'm quite happy watching them at home. So, I mean, there's so many on Netflix, I've managed to like rack up quite a few and fill in some gaps. So I just think they're great to have on Netflix. It's such like, it's a real treat that so many of them are available. And especially if you've got kind of kids at home, you can just put a few of those on and it's all lovely. So a 5 for small screen.
5. Don't see why, I don't think maybe wasn't paying that much close attention. Like I said, I used the English dub because I was just feeling a bit knackered whilst watching it, but I didn't feel it had maybe some of the spectacle as like Spirited Away kind of thing, which I'd watch Spirited Away and the cinema in a heartbeat. This one I'd probably take a bit longer to go and watch it in cinema. So but I thought it was great on a small screen. Engagement score, Danny.
Oh, I think it's quite high because it's just so like crazy and so much is going on. I think I'd probably say 5. I was like, well in. and yeah, my kids do.
David?
Yeah, I think I'd go 4.5. I think it really does draw you in and you know, it is one of those kind of, it's not a film I would be like looking on my phone while it was on. I'd be really like very much, I don't, you know, there's nothing more interesting in the room than this. So yeah, for a good solid 4.5.
Helen?
A little bit lower. So this time around watching it, I ended up kind of having to split the viewing and there was at least a day or two in between the viewing, which I have to factor into the engagement. And I think they just tend to have like this kind of like dreamy quality and you can sort of be a bit like, oh, I'm kind of watching it, but then I'm also just kind of like feeling the vibes and you can kind of like go, oh, I didn't really read that bit of the subtitle. I was just looking at a fish and kind of like get to the next stage without having like missed anything. So a 3.5.
4. I didn't know. I thought it was going to be I don't want to say traditional, quote unquote, mermaid story, but I thought that's where it was going to go and everyone's going to live happily ever after. So I didn't feel there was that much jeopardy and, you know, it transpired as I thought it was going to do. But otherwise, there's a lot that happened to get to the happily ever after that isn't traditional in these kind of films. And I shouldn't use the word traditional because they're all kind of different. So it kept me engaged in spite of being so tired at the end of the day when I watched it. So 4.1. And that gives us an overall score of 4.11875.
That's good.
Cool. It's almost got as many places as pie.
I'm going to go 5 decimal places or 5 significant figures, whichever way you want to use it. So as I've said before, we have had quite a few Studio Ghibli films in the pod booth. Helen has done some number crunching and can tell us where Ponyo ranks in those films.
My maths is not great, so let's hope I read this one out right. So Kiki's Delivery is at the bottom, 3.72.
Boo.
What?
Yep. And then...
oh.
Then my neighbour Totoro, 4.04. And then we have Ponyo, 4.11. And then with a huge score of 4.31 is Howl's Moving Castle. So
wow.
Future guests, if you're picking any Studio Ghibli, you've got Howl's Moving Castle to beat in the to be the champion of Flixwatcher for Studio Ghibli.
Well, there you go. So everyone, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And as well as following us just to see what we're talking about week in, week out, day in, day out, we do put a shout out before we go into recording. So listen out, watch out for a tweet like this. We're reviewing Ponyo with @HeDanny and Dave Smith from Wardour Studios. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. So we had one response. Who wants to take that away? Do you want to read it out, Danny?
Yeah, sure. So Russell Bailey at Russ Loves Movies says, one of Ghibli's most accessible films. Gorgeous animation, naturally, and a powerful message about our place in the world. Not quite top-tier Miyazaki, but he is a director with so many masterpieces. 4 stars, edging close to 5 stars.
Well, matches up to what we kind of said. And the gif I chose for this is... Oh, no. So the gif for this image is one of my favourites, where Ponyo's taking human form for the first time and running along the sea, running along the waves alongside some massive fish. Such a great scene, actually.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
She's so happy.
And this is what I'm going to show this to my friend who says the animation isn't that great because I think it looks amazing here. Anyway.
And it's very
Danny,
small.
Danny, David, can you tell us where we can find you guys online and say goodbye to the listeners?
Yeah, sure. We are at smallwardour.co.uk. What
was that? That's it. Fair enough. That's it. Go and find the stuff.
Oh, sorry. I could have said more, couldn't I?
That gets
and
to the point.
If you want to listen to Super Great Kids Stories, you can find us on where you find all your pods if you want to hear some of the stuff we make.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you very much for having
Thanks
us.
For
yeah.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.